हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्रु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So the 10 offenses. Criticizing and finding faults in devotees or sadhus is a serious offense against the holy name. How can the name tolerate criticism of devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the glories of the name? Therefore, offending sadhus or saintly persons is the first namapara. Right, in other words, the Lord's kripa shakti, all right, that is coming to people through the preachers. Does that make sense? It's not coming through the neophyte. It's not coming through the uttama. It's coming through the madhyama. Why? The uttama then is acting as a madhyama, right? And the neophyte is taking up the occupation and activities of the madhyama. So in that condition, that's where the chit shakti is then happening. Right? Does that make sense? That's why if you offend those devotees, then that mercy of the holy name is coming through them. So therefore, if you offend them, then that means your connection with the holy name is not strong. So the name won't be pleased. Does that make sense? So that's the simple point. Right? Of course, then there's the element of that, those who are dedicating their names to propagate the glories of the holy name, then these are the ones that are dear to Krishna. Then you're dealing in relationships. So then, if somebody that is important to you, others can't deal with badly, right? That's also a natural, point of relationship. Does that make sense? Right?
Right.
Yes.
Just to give some of the chit potency, is that a little bit like when we're offering obeisances to one of the devotees, we're offering obeisances to the super soul within?
Offering obeisances to the super soul within? That's there, but this is something specific, means that the Lord is not giving his mercy directly. It's always through devotees. That's why Krishna is saying, someone who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. Someone who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. Because there's no such thing as Krishna directly giving. Krishna always gives through someone. Even our karma doesn't come direct. It always comes through someone. Right, you get some benefit, you get some loss. It's always through living entities. You know, the same way as one living entity is food for another. So in the same way, your karma is enacted, good or bad, through them. Same time as devotional service comes through them. So the whole point is everything is based on relationship. Everything's based on the personal aspect. There's no such thing as not personal. You know, we may try to say that there is, but everything's happening is personal. Even you're upset, these guys are so impersonal, but still it's people who are impersonal. Right? I'm not going, this pillar is so impersonal. I mean, it doesn't matter what I do, it's never happy, it doesn't reciprocate. No one will take that seriously. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? So there's another element that's there. It's another element of stuff.
Krishna comes and he performs human in human-like form, so that gives the greatest range of field to emotion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because otherwise being God is, you're God, and so everybody's going to appreciate that. And if they don't, then they're here in the material world. But as in the human pastimes, then you have your range of emotions is so much greater. The range of experiences, the range of expression of that affection is so much more. The variety is so much greater. So that's why the human element then becomes very, very important. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just
Maharaj, regarding the first offense, it's blaspheme, but sometimes we become somewhat critical.
Well, it says here, opens with criticizing and finding faults.
Yeah. So the word criticizing and critical, I mean, I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah.
When we develop a sense of knowledge, or I don't know if it's knowledge or false knowledge, but there is a perception that we choose association, and sometimes in order to do so, then you may decide not to associate with certain individuals.
But that's the qualities that are there. It's not the specifically the individual, because if the individual behaved different, you would associate. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's a quality that's there. If you find that the qualities are manifesting, you're unable to actually appreciate, so therefore you don't associate with them. You associate with those who you appreciate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, the element of the judgmentalness, you have to understand, is judgment isn't actually an end in itself. Right, it's not something that by having judged something, therefore now the action is complete. You know what I'm saying? I cut up the potato, therefore now everything's done. No, now you have to cook it. So cutting the potato is one of the aspects. You also had to decide you were going to get a potato. You had to go to the market and buy it. You had to bring it home. You had to wash it. Then you cut it up.
So are you referring to...
So, in other words, this judgmentalness, some people feel that by making a judgment on another person, then everything is put into place, right? You know, it's like, you know, the two devotees will, you know, stand on the veranda leaning over on the edge and, you know, talk about everything in the universe, and, you know, by the end of the evening, they've worked out all the problems of the society, right? And so then they feel very good about themselves. But actually, nothing's happened. Just the two of them. Yeah, if the GBC did that, or if the Tamil president did this, or only in Bukta they did this. Or, you know, it's nice. But nothing was solved. Other than they may get more of a focus and determination on what they should do. But if it ended at simply judgment was there, that itself's not service. You know what I'm saying? In other words, fault finding is not a bona fide service. Some people, of course, they, you know, I think, single-handedly elect themselves to the post of, you know, generalissimos of certain, you know, contingencies of, you know, criticalness towards others. But it's not a service. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, in the West, basically what they do this in a bar.
Yeah.
In the bar and decide how to run the country.
Yeah, but devotees don't go to the bar, yeah. So they do it, you know, walking to the temple or sit in the courtyard eating pizza.
So what I was referring was in our association. Sometimes when you associate with some, then you naturally distinguish.
Distinguish is all right, but my point is what is the element of distinguishing, the quality of distinguishing? That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
So just that you've distinguished, that itself is not the service. You know what I'm saying? The distinguishment is therefore taking up good association.
Yes.
And avoiding bad association.
Yes.
But the point is you're avoiding bad association. You're not criticizing it. You're not finding fault in it. In other words, this is the state of consciousness that this person's in, and right now, that's not beneficial for my advancement. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you associate with someone who's more seen. Because the point is, you're just going to tell. Like, I bring you, you know, a basket of fruit. Would you like some fruit? And you'll look in it and then pick one out. You know, but the point is you're picking out one, so you're looking for what's good, not so much as criticizing all the other ones that you didn't pick. You understand? That's what I'm meaning by the criticalness. It's a matter of, okay, this is the associations that are available, so for me, this one's the best. Rather than all these other guys are bozos, therefore I choose this one, right? You know, that's what you use if you are, electing, you know, you're voting for an American president, you know. Then you go by, well, this guy's a bozo, so this guy's a little better, so then you vote for him. At least that's the way my mother used to do it. You know, this guy's worse, so we'll vote for him. You know what I'm saying? It's not like that. It's a matter of this is how you're looking for what's good. So to look for what's good, you have to discern for what's not as good.
So the strength to be able to make those decisions will come from
Unfortunately, association.
Yeah, it will come from the guru-disciple relationship, or it come from
It will come from Prabhupada's books. It comes from the teachings of the acharyas. It comes from senior devotees. It even comes from other devotees.
Sometimes we may think we're taking the right association, but actually,
then if you find later on it's not, then you adjust it. The point is if you can get benefit from somewhere, then it's okay. But then if that runs out, then it's like, you know, it's like you want to get to Calcutta, so you might have to take the bus from here to Dabulia. Dabulia is actually the opposite direction of Calcutta. But that's where you can get another bus that's going to Calcutta. You know what I'm saying? So if at least it got you to the place where you can take up something else, then that, it still works. Does that make sense? Or the point is all these things require maturity. So that's the whole point, is that we should be working to try to understand the philosophy and try to apply it. Does that make sense? That okay?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just that I'm thinking in the term of...
Means it's like this. Want a specific answer? Ask a specific question. Want a general answer? Ask a general question. Sometimes in asking a general question, because it's very broad, you know, you'll use a few things as examples. If I pick the right examples that actually were the detail of your question, it works. But if not, that's why you have a point. When that's clear, then you can give examples based on that. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll take whatever it is and make it into a generic question, like the other day at the class, right? In the Bhagavatam class. So we were asked a question, so we turned that into something very generic, you know, like that. Then from there, then if it answers the question, good. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, therefore I'll chew.
Yeah, because the point is if you're still, that means you have to know exactly what it is that you're looking for.
I know what I'm looking for, but I'm not sure if I want to express it now.
Okay, then that's okay, then that's fine. This one. You had something?
Yeah, that was maybe, would be also maybe an answer. When one has not a, cannot ask a guru, just right away, maybe a guru or an elder devotee, maybe nobody is around you, only a few other people. So maybe sometimes it's also good just by chanting, pray that you today please Krishna give me this good association.
Yes, no, that's...
Yeah,
no, it works. It's always good. Prayer is always valuable. Prayer always works. Okay. Two, those who try to comprehend spiritual subject matter with material intelligence falsely conclude that Lord Vishnu's name, form, qualities, and pastimes are different from the Lord himself. In other words, they impose material characteristics and limitations on spirituality. Thus, they equate demigods like Shiva and Brahma with Supreme Lord Vishnu, or even think that these demigods are independent of Lord Vishnu. The chanting of such persons is offensive. So basically speaking, you know, this category would fall into, you know, those that are into demigod worship and those kind of things like that. So therefore they have so many mantras, you know, so many names that they chant, and they think it's just the same. So that definitely, that category is going to be there. But as we also discussed before, this deism and pantheism, we also have to be very careful about, even in the monotheism. Right? Because this deism is that, okay, then Krishna is like this, so then Maya is like that, but there can't be any connection. You know, so then it's also, then we consider the demigods independent. Right? because in some religious circles they consider, you know, the personality who's in charge of encouraging us to do bad things is independent from God, right? So that would be an example of this, even within a theistic environment, not just a Hindu, you know, got everybody on the altar. Like Prabhupada talks about, there was one guy who had all the demigods and everything on his altar, and he also had a picture of Hitler. Right? So then, this is during World War II, and then suddenly one of his friends said, "What do you got Hitler there for?" Like that, says because of this war, I'm getting so much business. You know, so I'm so grateful to the man. You know, so therefore, like that. Does that make sense? So we have to be careful of the subtleties that are there in these things. Like that. So means otherwise we can go through this and we've heard the 10 offenses of the holy name. So then we're talking on things that might apply for us, that we might still be applying these things. You know, that's why I was talking about the element of the criticalness. We'll take it, blasphemy. Okay, if we're standing up and yelling and screaming and this and saying they're disgusting and all that, and then we'll say that's blasphemy. But just, you know, making comments about them and this and that, we won't take that as that. But that also is considered. It may be less, you know. But it's still a problem. Does that make sense? So that means that's what this class is for, is to, it's not a matter, we got to go through the 10 offenses, we're devotees, we should hear that. You know, no, it's a matter of what are ways that this applies to us that maybe we didn't consider. Right? Is that okay? Third offense is an offense against the holy name to consider the spiritual master who is self-realized and perfect in chanting of the holy name to be an ordinary mortal who possesses a material body and thus disobey and disregard him. So then in this principle is that the spiritual master is representing the Supreme Lord. So he is not going, you know, very rare he comes personally and instructs. Okay, if you're Bilba Mangal, maybe he'll do that. But if not, then much of the time we see is that he comes through the devotees. So it's similar to the first one. So therefore, we may consider them ordinary, right? So Upadeshamrita also deals with this. You know, any physical difficulties, any other kind of things, we consider it a fault. This is something we shouldn't do when we're dealing with devotees, right? Now, another aspect that we're dealing with here is we're dealing with what is called in the parampara, means you have generally, basically, two main... It's not two main systems. It's the same thing, but it's just basically how it's applied. You have where you have the acharya, and he has his disciple. And when the disciple grows up, he becomes acharya, and like this. And that way it goes on. And according to the time, place, and circumstance of the guru-disciple relationship, therefore, then the philosophy will be presented in a particular way. Does that make sense? Like you see Jiva Goswami, he's dealing with these persons who are very fixed. You know, in other words, they appreciate God and they appreciate his godness, but they don't really understand rasa. So they can only deal with tattva. So then they can't handle that Krishna is engaged in the rasa dance. Like that. I've actually heard people like that. The husband's a Krishna devotee. Wife says, "I'll never worship him." Like that. She worships Ram. You know, because he's very dharmic and everything like that. He says, "I have nothing to do with this Krishna," you know, because he's not, you know, moral like that. So, therefore, having such persons, then he's explaining to them about the relationship between Radha and Krishna based on tattva. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, Krishna and Radharani, they are, the Lord and his potency. So technically, then they're eternally, you know, married. That's their natural relationship. All other manifestations are there for pastimes. And then you can quote, because there are in the different Puranas, pastimes where Lalita performs the marriage ceremony for them, and I think Brahma does it. And there's all these different pastimes where they're all playing. And then they do this. And then there's one when Radha and Krishna are very small. They're still babies. No, I think they're like 3 years old. Yeah, and they're just wandering around and all this in the courtyard, and Radharani calls Krishna, and then they walk off, and bang, they turn to their normal age, you know, out in the forest. And then Lalita does the wedding for them, and this and that. So it's all part of their play. like that. It's not that they're actually married, but the point is because the ceremony's done, it works for those who are moralistic or religionists. Right? Does that make sense? So like that, the acharya may very much change the presentation or the angle or perspective by which we present the philosophy. Does that make sense? So that can go on, and it works. It doesn't matter. Then you have what is called, means we don't have a technical name for it, other than founder acharya, but in Sanskrit, like the Shris, and they call it the Acharya Purush, which means is you have a founder acharya, he establishes what is the perspective and viewpoint, the principle of that. Everybody after him follows that exactly. They don't change that. Detail, of course, of time, place, and circumstance of the person, but it's still based on that fundamental foundation. That way, then everybody, then like the postman, but here is like, you know, the postman doesn't even have to have that much qualification. It's based for that the mission can spread, because the only time it's used in this way is in the Kali Yuga within the Sampradayas. Only the Sampradayas, you know, main Sampradayas use these. So therefore you have, you know, Nimbarka, Vishnu Swami, Ramanuja, Madhva, Shankara, like that, you know. Does that make sense? They use it. So then for us, that means Prabhupada is taking that position. He writes his books. He says this is there for 10,000 years. That's the length of the mission. So therefore, if you simply quote these books and give that presentation, and you can do that from your understanding, then it has potency. Does that make sense? Okay. So then that should cut the other, who is self-realized and perfect in chanting the holy name. Right? Because here, self-realized means he understands he's serving the Krishna, and is perfecting and chanting the holy name is he is focusing and trying his best to chant. And so whatever he has, he can give that to you. Right? Because basically, if you take all the devotees in the movement, most devotees are made by someone who is not even initiated or is brand new. How is that? There's somebody who just joined a couple of months or weeks or days before you did, and they're able to get you from karmi life that you've been in since time immemorial for lifetimes and unlimited lifetimes of Brahma and knock you out of that into devotional service. That means potency is there. Why? This is the system. This is the purpose of the Acharya Purush system. As long as they say what Prabhupada said with that sincerity, whatever the little bit it is, it carries the potency. You know? So therefore it's like a stream. It's small, but it's got water and it's fresh. You know, Prabhupada's like a huge river. Like that. But it's still something from there. It works. Does this make sense? That's how we apply the guru system within our society. That's how the Gaudiyas work. Does that make sense? Because that's how the... means if you go to a Madhva, why are they called Madhva? Is Madhva their guru? He is the founder of Acharya, so he's their Siksha guru. But the Diksha guru is someone else. If you go and talk to the Madhvas, oh, what are they talking? Madhva philosophy. Right? What Madhva said. And if you ask them, who's your spiritual master? Oh, then they'll say the name, the specific Diksha Guru. But otherwise, they can go the whole conversation, not even bring them up. They'll only talk about Madhva. You go to the Shris, they'll only talk about, Ramanuja. So does that make sense? So we have the same thing. We stick to what Prabhupada says. It works. That makes sense. Because if it didn't work, basically speaking, unless Prabhupada directly preached to you and brought you in the door, then there'd be no one else around. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. And if we say, well, actually, they didn't have any potency, then even if they left, why are you still here? Because there was potency. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's why one has to be very careful about making comments about the spiritual master. Excuse me. Okay. Yes.
That's in regards to all spiritual masters, not just to one's own spiritual master.
No, that's all.
That's everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So, because you have a spiritual master, you shouldn't feel that others are unfortunate because they don't have your spiritual master for their spiritual master.
From historic perspective or perspective of facts, if one sees that there has been clear transgressions of Vaishnava principles or even dharmic laws by people in position, whether it be gurus or authorities, then what should be our attitude towards such individuals? Because one doesn't want to fall into the category of making this mistake.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time,
you have to be
intelligent. To live
life. Yeah, yeah. And the point is what benefit you've gotten, that is there and that's taken, and whatever is not working now, it's just left. You know, it's just like you get something, you have a knife, it works, and then it's used. When it gets blunt, you don't use it. You find another one that is.
But if the people are not here, it's a different story. But if they're still here, and
then you avoid them. You know where they stand in Mangalarki. You can stand on the other side. Like that. It works.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, that's the basic. You just have to be very quick to get out before the lights turn on. Okay. Four, is it an offense to criticize and find fault with the Vedas, Puranas, and other corollary scriptures? So, there is no fault in the Vedas, Purana, or corollary scriptures. Now, all means if it's bona fide Shastra, it's bona fide. Now, whether we particularly use it or not, or the perspective like that, we have to be able to understand. Like the Rajasic Puranas are bona fide, but the presentation of them is meant for those with a Rajasic mentality. So therefore, knowing that, then we can take from it the proper things. Otherwise, then we'll make a comment. Or if we say, you know, the Gita doesn't have a solution, or it doesn't work, or these things, then these things, it's not recommended. Let us put it that way. So we see here is that the devotees who preach, the devotees who actually, instruct us or guide us, you know, the shastras on which those things are being done, right? Because books are the basis, whatever it is, for what is being given to others, right? And then those persons that are giving that, like that, the holy name, it's means all this is about the holy name, right? Not understanding the name is special. So, yeah, so that has to be very careful. It's not that this is bogus or that's bogus. You know, someone's reading Govinda Lilamrita, that's bogus. No, it's not bogus. It's just not meant for us. Does that make sense? You know, if you're in first grade and they hand you, you know, a book on quantum physics, it's not that it's bogus. It's not for us. Right? I think it was, what is it? I think it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked about printing Govinda Lilamrita. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, very good idea. Says you make two copies. Says you keep one, and I think it was give the other to me. You know, or like that. You know, so that was it. You know, so it's like, it's bona fide, just it's not for public distribution. Okay. Is it an offense to think the glories of the holy name are exaggerated? We don't come across, generally it's not so much, I mean, in the beginning it's not a problem for us, like that. But you think about it, is anything anybody's trying to get you interested in, generally it's exaggerated. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you get an ad, it's exaggerated. You know, it's not that great. You know, the guy's, you know, puts on his deodorant, walks down the street, and as he walks down the street, then every good-looking girl from every shop comes out and follows him down the street. It doesn't happen like that, you know, it's like that. You know, they had to pay those girls good money to come out onto the street like that. You know, so that's means so there's an exaggeration there. So we shouldn't think that when the Shastras are saying the glories of the name, that there's an exaggeration. What they say about it, when they say that one name can clear all the sins of the universe, it means that. It can do more than that, but at least that's how much we'll understand. Right? So it can do whatever is said about the holy name, like that, is the way it is. Right? That's the whole point. That was the problem with, you know, that one Brahmin, when Haridas Thakur, I think his name was the Chakrabarti or something. And he had said that, you know, one name of Nama Bas, chanted Nama Bas, will give you liberation. And he was saying it's not impossible. You know, it's not possible. The liberation is very, very difficult, you know, like that, because for the impersonalist, that's the big deal. But for the devotees, liberation is not at all what they're looking for. It's like as just a side benefit. Like when you get lunch, they'll also give you, you know, some salt on the side. You're not getting a, you know, I want the, you know, I just give me the salt. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, we don't think that they're exaggeration. It's an offense to consider the holy name to be fictitious or concocted. Like that, the name is directly Krishna, so it's not something made up. It's not this man-made thing that, you know, man needs, has a need for religion, and therefore he concocts God and rituals and all that kind of stuff. You know, this is that's not the method. God was there first, right, and then like that. So does that make sense?
Third. You mentioned that some devotees, they maybe work 2 weeks or 1 month in a movement and they were able to attract some other devotees.
Yes.
And in this case, those persons, they could carry this potency unconsciously. And
well, you think you give him a bag, and then the president says, "Okay, here's some chit shakti, you know, take it out, use it wisely, you know, like that."
I mean, because you cannot give something to the person which you don't have.
Yeah, but the point is why are they out there? Why are they talking to you at the Sunday feast or out on the street? Because they have conviction. Are they being paid? No. So that's why it works, because they believe in it. So therefore, they believe it's best to be a devotee. Therefore, they can make you a devotee. But that's all the farther they can take you. Like that. Maybe they can show you how to put on a dhoti and tilak, but then that's about it. Then you have to start hearing from other devotees. My point was, as the example was, to show that potency is being carried by the preacher. So that's why preachers aren't criticized. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that okay? Yes.
This whole concept of the name or Krishna being offended, in the eighth canto, it's described that since Krishna is equal to all, that actually he's not affected by prayers or blasphemy. But then when we read in the third canto, when Hiranyaksha was speaking harshly toward Varaha, it said that he was actually hurt by it. So that we know that he does have feelings. It's impersonal to think that he doesn't have feelings. So how do we sort of balance these two? That in one hand he's, you know, completely, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're offering prayers or blasphemies, but then on the other hand he obviously has emotion being a person, a supreme person.
Okay. You could hear? Yeah? Okay, so let us say you're walking to the temple, and there happens to be some dog there down on the side there, and it knows you coming and gets bent out of shape, starts barking. Do you care? No, you just walk to the temple. Let us say you want to have a relationship with that dog, and you get down there and try to be nice to him, and then he starts barking. Then it affects. So the whole point is as far as the position goes, it doesn't bother him because he is Atmarama. So the point is the expansion of the living entities is for increasing. So if somebody doesn't take it seriously, you know, it happens. You know, like that. It's the nature of the living entity. But the point is if he comes into a relationship, then he can't be hurt. So that's why then Maya is very careful to not let you in unless you're going to be serious. And as soon as you show you're not serious, then she has these nice tricks to get you out the door. Because she doesn't want you hurting Krishna. You know, so, like that. Of course, you have to remember that Hiranyaksha did get killed for what he had to say. But, you know, so, I mean, it did work out at the end. But even then, you can see as he only it's part of the thing. Unless you get upset, how do you fight? It's just part of the rasa, so that's all. Because otherwise, he would have gone on fighting. But the demigods are too worried that, you know, this demon, they don't have that faith, but they're dependent upon the Lord, right? So they don't have the faith. They're thinking, well, what if the demon gets away? You know, what if Krishna doesn't kill? What if, you know, like this, all that kind of stuff. You know, Krishna, is, if he wants to kill him, then there's no problem. But so that, on that side, that faith is less. But at the same time, that dependency on Krishna, we're depending upon you to straighten out this universal mess so that we can move forward, you know, with our, you know, back to our positions and posts and, you know, all those nice things. So then, therefore, then Krishna kills him. Does that sound make sense? So, therefore, then you can see in that point that he's that same aloof. Because otherwise he'd just go on enjoying the taste of the fighting. But because of the relationship with the others, therefore then he kills him. Is that okay?
Yeah. So is that why in the beginning, when people are chanting, they don't really have that relationship established yet? It's harder to offend the holy name because there really is no relationship? That's sort of like the dog example you were saying.
It means, the point is yeah, you could say it, because it's not so. It's just like if you have an acquaintance, you may not be, if they say something stupid, it won't bother you as much as someone who's a closer friend, even though they say exactly the same thing. So the whole idea is that these things, it's not that, oh, this is what you learn when you first become a devotee and then after that you advance past it. No. As you become more advanced, these things become more critical. Like that. Does that sound like sense? Because it gets more and more subtle. Hmm? Okay. Hmm. Okay. 7. One who commits sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name can never be exonerated from this offense by any process, including the disciplines of yama, niyama, dhyan, meditation, and so on in the yoga system. Okay. So on the strength of the holy name, in other words, you think that if the holy name is so powerful it can remove all sin, so if I perform sin, I can wash it away by chanting, then Krishna will be very... There's nothing you can do to correct that. Because then the point is then you're just exploiting Krishna. You know, that niceness, that everything is there, you're using it for your own purpose. That, then there's no... Just like if there's an accidentally one, you know, kills a cow or a Brahmin, then there is prayaschittas you can do. But if you on purpose did it, then there's basically nothing you can do. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole idea, is that in you're dealing with is that if it's a conscious that I can do this and then chant and I'll be freed from that, then that offense, there's no method for purification. Does that make sense? Okay. 8. Yes.
So when people do that, like you said, there's no method of purification. So by sincere endeavor, eventually Krishna will see that people are sincere, even though...
That's there, but generally someone who would do that has a tendency to not be sincere. You know what I'm saying? If having done that you figure it out, then if you show that sincerity long enough and consistent enough, then maybe Krishna will... You know, but then you're dealing time, and it's you have to prove to him that you mean it. You can't just say it just because you said a prayer and then that's it.
Yeah, and that tendency will, like the seed will, the offense will grow again. So often, if it's to that depth of offense, where then it will just take someone down anyway, rather than, you know, like the tendency will be to be more offensive.
Yeah, because then it means that it appears you got away with it, so then you do more and more, and then like that. You know, in other words, you can become proud. But the point is here is that we are sinful, so it's not that we're not sinful, and our behavior or mentality is not sinful, but it's not that we're trying to be sinful, we just are sinful. But here it's like, it's okay to be sinful because I chant, so therefore it doesn't matter. Does that sound like something? Okay. 8. Only a person in illusion thinks that mundane ritualistic activities such as charity, fasting, vows, abnegation, austerity, and so on the same level as the transcendental activity of chanting the holy name. But, so in other words, all these other things don't have the same potency. They're all subordinate to chanting, because whenever you do any of these other things, there's supposed to be the chanting of the holy name involved, right? Because the whole idea is that the Vedas are saying one should chant the holy name, right? Does that make sense? That's what they're trying to establish. But because people aren't necessarily so interested in the name, they think something more ritualistic is going to, how do you say, be more efficient. Therefore, there's so much faith in these things. So they're part of the process. But the real process is just chanting the holy name. Does that make sense? So that means whatever happens, the only real purification is chanting. Does that make sense? Yes.
In some places around the world, devotees mainly congregate when there's festivals, or some countries when there's yagyas. Like I was in Bali for a few months, and it's very hard to get people together. But when there's yagya, everyone shows up. It's just their culture.
Yeah.
So then not to fall into this mistake means just have the continuous chanting of the holy name at that festival.
Yeah, like that. Or they're coming, so therefore, you know, everybody will chant, and then you have your yagya, and then you do more chanting. You know, the whole point is they're coming because of the yagya, and while since they've come to the yagya, you're going to, you know, chant and distribute prasad. So like that means that you use whatever. In other words, these things are all there in the Vedas because they're things that people will feel is uplifting. You know, and depending upon who they are, generally anyone in the Vedic system likes yagyas because that's the one common ritual amongst every branch of the Veda. While other things, you may be into deity worship, you may not. You may be into, you know, social work, you may not. You may, all these different things are there, but yagya is common to everybody. So it's the one thing that you can be sure that if that's going on, people will come. But that's just, so it's actually, its significance is that people think it's significant, right? It's not that the yagya itself, especially if we're performing, then is not based around the names and worship of Krishna and all that. So it's bona fide element of the Pancharatra and things like that. So it's also part of the transcendental knowledge and all that. So it's another way of chanting the holy name, like that. Then, but we try to give some emphasis to the name and other things like that. So there'll be some preaching, there'll be some chanting, there'll be other things like that. So then you try to, excuse me, balance it out by introducing these others. And then, but if that's what gets them there, then why not? Have a yagya every day. Come to the Sunday yagya. Like that. So then it works. Okay. You have something? No.
Nine, it is also an offense to instruct a faithless person who is averse to hearing the glories of the holy name. So in other words, someone who's not interested, don't preach to them. Like that. Talk about being nice, being good, this, that, you know, that kind of stuff. But don't talk about chanting in that process. Otherwise sometimes they get really bent out of shape. I've seen people who like devotees, like taking prasad, like to come around, they'll discuss a little philosophy. But as soon as you start talking about chanting and all that, they get, you know, they feel that, you know, you're trying to get them to commit to something. You know, so then you don't say anything. Otherwise they get upset. You know? Main thing is what you don't know, you can't hurt yourself with. Right? So if you don't know any glories about Krishna, then you can't offend Krishna. Right, you just say, yeah, God, you know, where is he, this, that. You know, how much can you do? Like that. But if you know more about God and what he does, then you reject that. That's worse. Like that. Because otherwise, in most people, atheists, they don't know anything about God anyway. So, you know, he's a big light, no qualities. I mean, how much can you offend? You know, Brahman generally doesn't get too upset. You know, so does that make sense?
10, after hearing the wonderful qualities of the name, it is offensive to maintain material attachments of me and mine. This means one has not developed a genuine attraction or interest for chanting. So maintain means you consider it, what one means the grossest form would be you consider it okay. Does that make sense? You know, you think it's fine to be attached and this and that. So what's the big deal? Right? That'll be your grossest form. Subtlest may even be you don't even understand it. So there is that offensive mentality that you're very, you know, attached to me and mine. Right? Me is I am this, you know, aspect of my conditioned identity. Mine is what I've gained from interaction of my mundane identity with the material energy like this. So those things may be unspoken or not even thought about. But one has to ultimately take all the aspects of me and mine and connect them to Krishna. It doesn't mean you have to get rid of them. You just have to adjust them. Does that make sense? So like that. So, okay. Yes.
I would like to ask, how is the chanting connected with the Raghunuga Bhakti?
How is the chant connected with Raghunuga Bhakti?
Yeah.
What do you mean, how is it connected?
Why?
It means like it's an R in Rama and Raghunuga starts with an R, or
how it develops.
How what develops?
How developed the degree to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis.
It's like this. When it's important to you, then it'll be obvious. You know what I'm saying? No mom sits around and frets, you know, about her 3-year-old girl if she will actually appreciate and understand boys. You know what I'm saying? Does any mother sit around and go, well, I don't know if my little baby girl will actually, you know, mature and all this and that. How will she learn about? No. When she hits puberty, she knows who boys are. Does that make sense? Still doesn't make sense. Okay. How do you know you're hungry?
Because I feel like.
Okay, so when it's time to start following the footsteps of the Brajabasis, you'll feel it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not you have to worry, well, how do you get like that? No, it's basically you it makes sense or it doesn't. If it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. You chant. Follow the 64 items of devotional service, because whether it's Vaidhi or Rag, it doesn't matter, it's still 64 items. Then that, by association, by practice, then that naturally arises in the heart. Does that make sense? Some may complain, no, you have to cultivate it, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur doesn't agree with that. He says that if you have that association, you catch it a little quicker, nice. But the point is you can't really dynamically use it anyway until you're liberated, until you come to Brahma Bhuta. So in any way, for a Gaudiya Vaishnav, when they get to Bhava Bhakti, then it'll naturally switch to Raghunuga anyway, because in Bhava, no one's following Vaidhi anyway. So all there is Raghunuga, because you have the Rag Atmika devotees that you're following. So they're Rag and your Rag Anuga, you're following their Rag. You understand? So if it makes sense now, great. If it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. You just remember Krishna at the time of death and they'll all work it out for you. Okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitāi Gaura Prema Nandini.